This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Going public isn't all it's cracked up to be these days. From Marketplace, I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio. The biggest Wall Street IPO of the year isn't going to be as big as many thought as concerns grow about the market. First Data will start trading today, set to raise about $2.5 billion, less than initially expected. Kathleen Smith follows IPOs at Renaissance Capital.
First Data is a bank credit and debit card processor serving merchants and banks. I think investors will look at this and expect to receive an attractive price. Good cash flow for First Data, but also it needs to improve its growth rate.
Supermarket chain Albertsons was all ready to do an IPO of its own, but it is postponing, another sign of a shaky environment.
The IPO market has been slower this year than over the last couple of years, mainly because recently we've seen a lot of stock market volatility, and that has caused investors to become very price sensitive about the IPOs.
Despite these concerns, one high-profile tech company is moving ahead. Payments company Square now says it's going public. Founder and CEO Jack Dorsey was recently named CEO of Twitter. He's keeping both jobs. Today we'll get news on whether people on Social Security and other benefits programs will get a cost of living adjustment. The so-called COLA depends on the level of inflation, but there's been hardly any of that recently. If there's no adjustment, that would be just the third time in four decades that's happened. But even if there's little inflation by official stats, many people on fixed incomes still have to stretch to pay the bills. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams looks at what all this means for the 70 million Americans affected.
Really? It depends on who you ask.
Well, I think it's going to work a hardship on a lot of senior citizens.
78-year-old Jane Davis of Knoxville, Tennessee, relies on Social Security for rent, health care, and groceries. She says they're getting more expensive and was hoping for a benefits increase.
Well, it's going to mean that I'm going to have to cut back, and I guess probably my groceries will be what I'll cut back.
But economists say low inflation means people shouldn't need the adjustment.
They will be able to purchase as much stuff in 2016 as they did in 2015.
Alicia Minnell runs the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. She says, big picture, some higher costs for seniors are offset elsewhere.
There are other components that the elderly do not spend money on, such as tuition and things like that.
Minnell says that balances things out on paper, even if not in the lives of every senior. I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
For millions of people over 65, gaps in Medicare coverage are another pressing concern. We've got an essay about that at marketplace.org. We're going to be hearing more and more about immigration and border security as the presidential campaign heats up. Let's get a perspective on this now from someone who's been following these issues for some time. Enrique Acevedo is a Univision news anchor and contributor to Fusion. He joins us from Miami. Hi there, Enrique.
Hi, Mark.
This is an issue you've been speaking about for a while. One of the points you often make is that America spends billions on border enforcement, but a far smaller amount of money on what you call the root causes of illegal immigration. Explain what you mean by these root causes.
According to the Immigration Policy Institute, border enforcement costs around $18 billion a year. In contrast, last year, we invested around $333 million to combat the lack of economic opportunity, the absence of strong institutions, and the extreme levels of violence behind or driving undocumented immigrations in countries like El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala.
Now, what you're talking about here is somewhat like what we know about medical care. If you prevent a health problem, it's often far cheaper to do that than have to treat it later. But a lot of people will hear this and be concerned about the proposal you have for less money on border spending, and also just be skeptical that USAID can help in some of these deeper issues, perhaps question whether this is America's business at all.
I think it's in our best interest. If we really want to solve or reduce undocumented immigration, we can't just focus on border enforcement. It has to be part of a broader strategy. We have to secure our border, but we cannot do it to a point in which we're militarizing and far from just securing our border. I think in a way we're making these once dynamic border communities, 12 million people that live on both sides of the border, we're just making their future less appealing, I guess.
So how are you proposing that the U.S. government invest to deal with some of these issues that you point out? What kind of programs are you talking about that you think might be effective?
I would shift resources from shutting the door on immigrants and instead focusing those resources on trying to create the conditions for these people to stay at home. And right now, there's on February, the State Department sent to Congress a plan requesting $1 billion in assistance to Central America to better economic opportunity, to try to strengthen the institutions, and of course to combat the high levels of violence that are driving hundreds of thousands of people away from those countries.
It is a controversial topic and a challenging one. Enrique Acevedo with Univision, thanks so much for sharing your views.
Thank you so much.
And finally, a trend-setting restaurant entrepreneur is making a move to change how we eat out. Danny Meyer, creator of acclaimed New York restaurants like Gramercy Tavern and The Modern, is eliminating tipping. A handful of American restaurants are experimenting with no tipping policies, typically paired with a boost in menu prices. Doing away with tipping can allow restaurants to raise hourly wages for workers. They can spread money around to kitchen staff, for example, who generally do not get a cut of the tips that servers earn. So far, the shift away from tipping, mostly at higher-end places, but Meyer's move could influence more restaurants to rethink how they charge diners and pay workers. From the studios at Montclair State University today, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.